Shall we start? Good afternoon. How are you? My name is Alan Mius. I am Flemish American. Hoe gaat het met u? Wie geht's? Comment ça va? How many French speaking? Only one? Well, we're two now. Okay. How many Dutch speaking? Of course. And how many German speaking? One, two, three, four, five, six. Oh, they come out of the woodwork. All right, welcome to this session. As again, I'm, clicker or something. I'm Alan Mius. I work in the Windows Phone division in Redmond, and my focus is purely on business experiences. How do you use Windows Phone in a business? And that obviously includes security, device management, and collaboration tools and those kind of things. So yesterday I did a collaboration session. Anybody here was here yesterday? The technician always raises his hand. He's here all the time. Two, three people. Thank you. And tomorrow we'll do an app management session for line of business apps and device management a little later than now, around 5 o'clock, I think. So you're welcome to that session too. If you want to know about all these things, I've created this website, windowsphone.com/business. Who knew about this website? A few people. So it's good that I show you quickly on the website. If you are, I presume, most of you IT professionals or people that work in an IT division or with as an IT partner for customers, if you want to find some of the documentation that you may need, you can go to the website, windowsphone.com/business. Now, if you do this from your localized version of Internet Explorer, you're obviously all using Internet Explorer, right? But if you do it from a localized version and your locale is put to Germany or Belgium or whatever locale, you may not end up at this site. So the locale has to be English US right there. The versions, the localized versions, are still not updated to this design, let's see, and the content is a little different. So if you change your locale, you'll find all this type of information. And there are obviously sections on security that we'll talk through today. And there is also a technical resource page where we add all kinds of white papers that you can download. And we are adding more of them as we go. So it's a great resource for you to go to and find additional information. What I'm going to talk to you today, there is a security white paper on this website that covers most of the things that I will be talking about today. So if we look at Windows Phone, we know that we released Windows Phone on October 29th of last year as a new version of the operating system that was based on the NT kernel and is sharing a lot of the common kernel technologies that we know with Windows 8 and Windows RT. Just like Windows RT, it's based on an ARM architecture. It uses an ARM system on a chip from Qualcomm, dual core at this point in time, and has a lot of the same security architecture. That's most of what I'm going to talk to you about today. Obviously, we have a very common user experience across a number of Microsoft endpoints, devices, Xbox, PCs, laptop, tablets. We have a infrastructure for collaboration, which I talked about yesterday with Office and all the Office servers, right? And we have an application platform that allows you to develop apps and distribute apps and control your apps from a private perspective, from a secure perspective. I'll talk more about that aspect tomorrow in the session. And you can manage the phone, which we will talk about tomorrow too. You can manage the phone with Windows Intune, but also with third-party device management systems, such as Mobile Iron, AirWatch, Afaria, the previously called Xen Prize, now Xen Mobile from Citrix, and others already have available mobile device management systems. I'm not naming them. If anybody in the room is here with a partner that develops a mobile device management system, but I know they're present at the event, raise your hand. Nobody? Okay. So there are more of them, and I'll list them all tomorrow, actually on a slide. I don't think I have a slide that lists them all today, right? So let's go into security. What I want to do is make sure that you understand what the security architecture of Windows Phone is, so that you can judge Windows Phone and what role it can play within your organization compared to competing platforms. There are a lot of them, at least two big ones, right? And how you can apply this within your organization, if it makes sense for you to use Windows Phone within your organization from a security perspective. What do you controls you can put in place, how you can protect the information and the user if you want, as they are carrying around data that belongs to your company or your customers or your partners that needs to be protected. They have privacy concerns. You have privacy concerns. How do we think about that in the context of Windows Phone 8? As it stands today. If you have questions, I don't know if there's a microphone, but ask the questions, and there's probably somebody running around with a microphone who can give you the mic so we can understand your question, or otherwise I'll just repeat it. So don't hesitate as such. Now, if we think about security on Windows Phone, we have a number of goals with Windows Phone. One of the goals can be a little concerning, if you want, if you're a security professional, because we think about the end user first. We think about what impact has security on the end user, and at the same time, how do we balance that impact with the concerns that a user of a phone has in terms of privacy, right? In terms of where his personal data lives versus where your data is, right? Where is the email from the company, et cetera, because they are concerned about privacy and safety in general in today's world, just like we all are, right? And at the same time, if we are thinking about the platform, we also need to think about what is the impact for the developer. Does this enable the developer to develop applications, or does it prevent him from developing applications? And where do we find the right balance between the two, right? Do we allow a developer to do anything, or do we put controls in place so the developer can do nice things but doesn't get access to anything they want as such? And I'll give you a number of examples of that. And obviously, we need to take care of policies that our governments put in place, or industry organizations put in place, or your organization put in place, and you need to be able to manage or apply those policies to devices that actually access information from your company, right? So we think about all those things and try to find a balance. Not always easy, I need to run a thin line, but we try, and we think we have a pretty secure platform that we deliver with Windows Phone 8. Let's see if that's true or not. I'll see it from your reactions as well as from your questions. How many of you are using a Windows Phone today, personally? At least 50%. And how many of you or your companies allow Windows Phone to be used or provide Windows Phone to your employees? A little less. So we need to work on that. Let's try. When we think about security and balancing all these things, the thing we start with is the hardware. Is this actually secure hardware? Because if we think about the threats in today's world, and we know a number of threats to nuclear facilities and stuff like that, and those types of threats are usually called rootkits, right? They get into a device or a computer, at a very early stage of the boot process. And they're there before the operating system even knows about the hardware or is woken up, so to speak, and the operating system never knows they're there. That's typical for rootkits today. That is the biggest threat, the most penetrating threat to security today. So together with the Windows 8 team, we built what we call secure boot, trusted boot environment. And if you know about trusted boot in Windows 8, it's exactly the same in Windows Phone 8 too. On the ARM platform, not on the Intel platform, but it's exactly the same architecture. A secure boot process that makes sure that the operating system boots in a known state that we can trust is the goal for our secure boot process on Windows Phone 2. We need to make sure that when the operating system is there and the user logs in and uses it, that they actually have a platform that is secure from the start of it itself. So secure boot is implemented in a system on a chip from Qualcomm that we use as a standard. We have platform specification or a chassis specification, if you want, that is based on a Qualcomm chip or a few Qualcomm chips that we support. We work closely with Qualcomm on implementing a secure mechanism for this system on a chip. The bootloader of the system, of the socket itself, as well as the UEFI implementation or the secure BIOS of the system. We work very closely with Qualcomm on implementing that. Everybody knows UEFI? All right, at least 50%, that's great. And obviously this helps us prevent the operating system, and I'll dive a little bit more in details on what this means and how it works, prevents the operating system from being penetrated at a very early stage. So the boot system starts when the user boots the phone, right? It turns it on, pushes the button, the phone starts. The firmware bootloader, which is a product, a software element from Qualcomm that is part of the SOC, is being booted by doing that, by adding power to this SOC. And the next step it does is the OEM and the Qualcomm provider deliver a UEFI environment. A UEFI environment is a software platform, if you want, a mini OS kind of, that has a number of applications in it that have different functions. Some of them are delivered by Qualcomm, some by the OEM, and some by us, and that execute the actual SOC and initiate all the peripherals that the SOC is commanding as such. UEFI is a standard, right? It's not something that is specific to Microsoft. Actually, Apple is using UEFI too, right, for all their devices. And the standard can be found on this website here. And you can get all the slides. They will be published or have been published. You can go there and read the specs if you have time to do that as such. Right? It defines a secure UEFI implementation, how it works, and we follow that standard with our partners. We require all our partners, being it Nokia, HTC, Samsung, Huawei, or whoever we work with to produce Windows Phone globally, to follow all the steps that we have defined and all the standards that we have defined to produce a Windows Phone, right? Although we do not control the production process, we have guidelines that our partners need to follow. We do some checking out of it. We are not there checking it every day. But it's a guideline that our partners need to follow. And some elements, the OS will not work if the right things are not implemented in this environment. Once the UEFI platform runs, there is an element that comes from us, which is the Windows Phone Boot Manager that actually boots the operating system itself, starts the operating system from an operating system volume on the phone, and starts that environment. And obviously, this delivers the user a login screen, and they can log into their phone using a PIN if it's managed, et cetera, and use the phone. There is a second Windows Phone 8 OS on the phone, which is a mini OS if you want. It's the update OS, right? If there is an update available for the phone, it will be downloaded over the air, usually over Wi-Fi. But if it's a small update, it's going to go small, less than 50 megabytes. It's going to go over the data network from the mobile operator, the provider. And once it's staged on the phone will reboot. The user has control over that. They can refuse the update, so to speak, right? But it will keep coming up for them to install. The user will say, yes, install it. The phone will reboot, go into this mini OS environment, update the actual operating system or UEFI environment, and then reboots into the Windows Phone OS itself for the user to use it again. The boot can also go in boot flashing. This is functionality only available to OEMs, so they can flash phones within a factory environment. Secure flashing only, there is no opting out of that. It's one of the rules we apply with our manufacturers to make sure that they keep within the standards. This system heavily depends on keys that are available within the hardware. And all these components are signed with keys that are unique, well, that are signed away or flashed away into the phone, and then fuses are blown so the keys cannot be changed. And all this depends on those keys, right? This results in the fact that the OS can only run a known image, an image that is properly signed with known keys that are fused away within this phone so that it cannot be tampered with as such. So in production, we provision a hash of a public key available that is available within the operating system and the UEFI environment that drives the full root of this chain, so to speak, to fully chain into the operating system itself. The fuses are blown, and a UEFI key database is provisioned during manufacturing that is used for all kinds of encryption and authentication and validation of components. As I said, there is no secure boot bypass. Secure boot flashing is required. So there's no way you can put a device in a non-secure boot environment. And let me make a comment to that. There is obviously a way we can do that. And we also do this together with our OEMs and our mobile operator partners in the early stage of every phone model when they're being tested by the mobile operators, right? In the lap of the mobile operators, they have phones that are not fully implement a secure boot environment. You will quickly see if any of you has a phone like that or a user has a phone like that. When it boots, it will say automatically, not for resale, right? We'll clearly say that in the boot screen. And if you try to apply some policies with an MDM system, they will fail because they do not follow the rules. So these devices are easy to recognize. If they may leak in your environment, but there's very little chance that they do as such. So a little bit talked about it. All the Windows Phone code or operating system code, OEM code, drivers, etc., applications that are delivered in box and that install at first use, all those components are properly signed by Microsoft. This is a little different than in Windows Phone 7, where we allowed OEMs to sign their own components and have their own root certificates to do that. We no longer do that. Microsoft gets all the components from OEMs, manufacturers, and adds them to our signing process within Microsoft and delivers them as an image to our OEMs and helps them do the integration. Well, let's go back and here. So what we have now is secure hardware with a secure operating system on top of it, right? That's where we are. We have been working from the bottom up to make sure we have a secure platform. Now, this platform obviously has an application platform or a managed code environment that users can or developers can use to develop applications for. These applications are developed with tools and then distributed to the phone, usually through a Windows Phone store. In an enterprise, you have separate signing authority, and I'll talk about that tomorrow. You can register as an enterprise, get your enterprise certificate, sign your own apps, and then load those apps onto managed phones within your organization as such. Now, the app platform, how does that work? How does the security architecture on Windows Phone work? On Windows Phone, we have a trusted computing base. Let's call it the kernel that has root in Unix terms, right? Super user, administrator rights in Windows terms. It has all the rights. It has a security database, a security policy database with security policy rules that define what components, objects, applications, etc., can do on the phone as such, right? Defines what they can do, what rights they have, and who can do it, so to speak. This policy system defines a chamber model. We often call it a sandbox. An application or operating system service or anything on the phone always runs in a sandbox. So every component of the OS, as well as any application we put in the operating system to work, as well as applications that are being downloaded and installed, all run in their sandbox. And the sandbox is what we call a chamber, and every chamber has security boundaries. It has a number of capabilities, or ACLs if you want, that can be used by that chamber or by the application that runs within that chamber. One element of that is that it has a storage facility that calls the operating system and says, I want to store information, and the operating system stores the information in the sandbox of the application, where the DLLs of the apps are installed, the same environment, the data is stored for that application. Again, isolated from other applications. And then it also defines what rights are in the application, and a application itself cannot elevate its rights. Once an application is installed on the phone, it has defined what it wants to be able to do. It tells the operating system that at installation through a manifest, the operating system defines the chamber, gives the rights, and the rights are fixed. They cannot be elevated. So we do, come to you in a minute, we do sandboxing plus least privilege. That's the model we use to define application sandboxes. You had a question? Yes. When an application doesn't update, it has the capability of saying, I'm going to change my manifest, I add functionality to my application, and then a new sandbox is created for that application with those capabilities. Yes, there's a good question. Is there some kind of approval process, right? That's yes, there is some kind of approval process. Let's have a look at the approval process. So the capabilities of the phone are available on MSDN as such for developers, and I'll show you those in a minute. Oh, that's back. We need to go forward. And there are multiple classes of capabilities in the operating system. If you are an enterprise or a software developer, you download the SDK, you use the SDK, you develop your apps, and you have a set of capabilities that are yours. I'll show you in a minute which they are. All the other capabilities, Microsoft capabilities and OEM mobile operator capabilities, are not available within an SDK that you have as an enterprise or a software developer. Right? They only are available to Microsoft OEM developer that live in Redmond, if I can call it that way, right? And not available in an SDK that can be downloaded. So let's have a quick look at some of this. to remember which buttons to push. Well, maybe I should wake up. Yeah. So first of all, if we talk about capabilities, if you start Visual Studio and develop for Windows Phone, this is a freshly started Windows Phone development project, right? There's absolutely nothing here. The only thing I did is every application will automatically have a Windows Phone app manifest, which is an XML file, which is bundled with the DLLs that are packaged into a XAP file, and then signed and distributed to be delivered through a marketplace. These are the capabilities that are available to different applications or this application as such, right? As a developer, I need to say, I want to make a call, or what I did earlier, because I want to show you something about it, is I am going to collect information about the device as well as the user, for example. Big privacy issue, of course. Or I'm going to collect location information, which is also a different capability class. I have to specify this within my app if I want to be able to use these capabilities. Now, what is a certification process? If you are a developer, you want to develop an application that's available for everybody, you want to upload it into the Windows Store so everybody can download it or buy it from you, or you want to put advertising into this app so you can make money that way and give it for free to your users, you will have to specify these capabilities that you need, right? There are a few, yes, go ahead. Yes and no. I wanted to show you some of the capabilities from an app perspective, what the user would see. And there are some capabilities, like, for example, the location capability, right? The location capability is a capability that will always show up for the user when they install the app and at first time they use the app. And there has to be a setting within the app, in the app settings, pane or whatever, however the developer defines that, where the user must be able to go in and disable location tracking, right? In some cases, the app will still work and give some functionality, but may have more limited functionality than when you allow location within your app, right? The other important thing here is being able to identify the device and identify the user. This has been changed from 7.0 to 8.0, or in the sense that in 7.0 you could track a user across devices. What does that mean? If you want to sell advertising in your app, you could track the user using the app on one device and then on the other device, and you could share that information with your advertisers, right? Because it's more valuable, you would get more money of that. In 8.0, that's no longer possible. You can only track a user or a device on one device, and it is publisher specific. In other words, it's no longer valuable to your advertisers as such. You can still have your user click on their advertisement and go to a website, etc., buy something or share something there. But the way with this user device and user ID is a combination of the device or the user ID, the Microsoft account ID is that, a hash of it anyway, plus you as a publisher of the app. And that combination, that code, that identifier is useful to you as a publisher, because you want to know if they use more than one app from you, right? Or how often they use it, that kind of stuff. But you don't want, or a publisher can no longer combine that information across devices or across users to aggregate them and make it more valuable and kind of be more penetrating into the personal life of a user. It's no longer possible today on Windows Phone 8. As a user, if we look at this on the marketplace, this, for example, is a PC remote app that allows you to do control your PC with your phone, right? Do presentations with your phone and click slides and those kind of things. When you look at it, the description, screenshots is all great, right? If you scroll down, you see your app requirements and you see what the capability classes are that the app is using as such, right? They have been checked by us through certification before they get published, and this is what is in the manifest, and it's actually what the app is doing, and this is what we publish then on the marketplace to make sure that you that the user knows about them. When the user installs them on the phone itself, they can get access to the same list of capabilities and see what the capabilities are if the user installs directly, obviously, from a phone, which most users do. The AccuWeather app, I don't know if it works in Europe, actually, but also does the location service, not just the device identity and the user identity, but also the location service is being tracked by this one. Obviously, if you want to know what the weather is, where you are, you need to allow this app to check your location, right? In this app, you can still disable it, and you can still enter a location name. It could be a city in a province, or a city, or a zip code, city number that it corresponds with the location you are. Obviously, if you're somewhere traveling, you don't know those things, right? You use your location. So that's why these type of apps use location. If you want to read a little bit about how we change the user identity tracking and how we combine these codes on the MSDN developer block for Windows Phone, you'll see how we change the user identity or the anonymous identity tracking on Windows Phone 8 to make it, let's say, less intrusive in the private life of the user, still useful to the publisher of the app, impossible to aggregate for advertisers across users and applications and devices as such. Questions around capabilities and how they are surfaced, those kind of things. So they define how a sandbox is created for the application and what level of privileges this application has. A sandbox is an environment. Oh, that's the wrong button. A sandbox is an environment in which the application runs. So it is really isolated. There is no inter-process communication between apps as such. They cannot communicate with each other, which is a drawback from a functionality perspective. Remember balance, right? We want to make balance, but it is more secure. If you look at an Android device will implement least privilege, but doesn't implement isolation between apps. An app can go and read data from another app stored in the file system on an Android device. Apple does isolation, but not least privilege. You can elevate your privileges within an iOS app that's once it's installed on a device as such without the user knowing, right? There have been cases like that in the App Store. Obviously, Apple has followed the rules and often retracted or removed those applications. So in the store, we do, obviously, we have a curated store. We do certification and verification. We verify the publishers themselves. So if you want to become a publisher, we will have a partner. It's VeriSign, actually, that will verify you as a individual or a organization to make sure that you are an existing person and you are, let's say, I don't know, legal, I suppose, right? Or those kind of things. And then once we have the app from you, we will certify the app. We will check it in terms of policies. right? Are you following the policies within the app in terms of what capabilities you are using, how you're using them, what the functionality in general is of the app? Is if it has a unallowable content and those kind of things. And then we also check it for malware with malware scanners, and a actual person in a lab will run, it's not a Microsoft, it's a third party that does this for us, will run the application eventually with a test account to get a full certification of the app. Anybody has delivered apps to the Windows Store already? One person. And what's your experience? Yeah, yours? Some long waiting times. How many apps do you have?
Three.
All right. Sometimes they can be long. That's true. We try to make them as short as possible. Long waiting times before you can post an update. Okay, all right. So it's a good thing if you go to Making Money with Windows Phone, that session, give feedback to that person because he's in charge of those things and can influence that. So we try to make it short, but I've heard before that there's sometimes long waiting. Somebody else has the same experience? You too? Yeah. I don't know. Compared, do you have iOS apps? No? Do you have iOS apps? We can't compare. You have one? Or waiting list long? No? iOS is better, right? You're not sure? All right. You are a mime person. You do only movements. Great. So when an app actually is misbehaving in the store, we can still revoke it. We will disable it. We won't uninstall it from a phone. We will remotely disable it, so it no longer can run and the user can no longer use it. Apps that no longer run, users usually are going to actively uninstall them, but sometimes they don't. But as long as they don't run, they're just dehydrated on the disk, so to speak, they cannot do any harm or be inappropriate if you want. No, nothing happens. It just doesn't start. Right. The question is, what happens if a user tries to start an application because the tile is still there, right? Nothing happens. They will click it, it won't work, click it, won't work. And they will say, right? My phone doesn't work. Let's uninstall the application. Then they go to the market to reinstall it, and they won't find it anymore. Jailbreaking is very difficult because of the secure boot environment. I'm not going to say impossible. I say virtually impossible. The lawyers require me to say that, and I think they're right. It's virtually impossible to jailbreak a phone, to get it out of its walled garden. Jailbreaking means that the phone no longer requires to connect to the Windows Phone Store to download its apps. It can connect to anything, any website, etc., to sideload or download apps as such. The most of the reason is the secure boot environment, the requirement of secure boot for the OS to actually boot, and then code signing requirements across the operating system itself. You obviously have two ways to unlock, developer unlock a phone. As a developer, you can receive codes from the developer's registration website where you unlock your phone so you can download or install applications directly from your development environment. Or as an enterprise, you can receive your own signing authority to develop your apps, not put them into a marketplace, but put them into your own store within your MDM system and provide or distribute them to your registered users within your enterprise as such, right? Those are the two scenarios you can have to have apps coming from a different source than the Windows Phone Store itself. Device encryption. Windows Phone implements BitLocker device encryption, like we know it from Windows 8 as such. It encrypts fully the internal storage, the two volumes that are usually available on the phone, the OS volume as well as the data volume for the users, encrypts it completely. It's not interruptive to the user. It has to be turned on by an IT professional. You use Exchange Server, or you use an MDM system to turn on encryption on the phone. User won't really see it. It will just encrypt, start the encryption, will not have to reboot the phone or anything like that, and start encryption on the phone. There's no user experience for when they reboot the phone, for example, they turn it off because they go on vacation or anything like that. Although, who's not taking their phone on vacation? Anyway, if they do something like that, they won't have to enter a PIN like in Windows 8 sometimes. You have a pre-boot PIN. We don't implement that on Windows Phone. And we also don't implement key escrow. So you cannot manage the keys as such. Encryption keys are generated at the first boot of the phone and stored within this UEFI environment in a TPM, a TPM 2.0 specification, where we store these keys in. Do you have a question? There's no way for a user to enable BitLocker. No, a consumer who buys a phone in a store and just uses it, they cannot enable the device encryption. We may change that in the future, but we don't enable it at this point in time. We don't have a pre-OS boot mechanism because it on a PC, it's pretty easy to do those things because you generate, you usually have a physical keyboard to enter pins as such before the actual operating system is available with the user input environment to do all that. Other systems are using more of a software encryption where you can have the operating system stop before it really fully boots and require the user to enter some type of PIN before the full boot goes on. And then the device is still locked and the user still has to unlock the phone. So you have to PIN twice. But it is within the operating system. BitLocker is enabled before the operating system actually boots or is functional as such. So no keyboard available, those kind of things as such. So as such, there is very little you can show about encryption. And the only way you can see on a phone, I have here a phone that is connected through a USB cable to my PC. This doesn't have secure boot, by the way, so that's why it's not available to you if you have that question. It does have a PIN though, because there's policy on the device. And if I go into settings and I scroll a little down to phone storage, you see that next to storage it says encrypted, right? If you take a phone out of the box like this 820 here that we're gonna give away later, and you would look at the storage, it would say, it wouldn't say anything. It would just say, this is how much storage there is. If there is an SD card in the phone, the user can choose to put pictures, and you can see, right, pictures, video, music, on the SD card, nothing else, right? When there is an SD card in the phone, they cannot put anything else on this SD card but these media files. With an MDM system, you can block an SD card from being used by the user, or you can allow it as such. Only these media files are there. The SD card is not encrypted when BitLocker is turned on. Only the internal storage is encrypted. By the way, if you are, yes, question. So So the question is, if you bring your own device to your organization enterprise, right, and you have a Live account or a Gmail account or something like that on that phone before you have the enterprise stuff on the phone, and the enterprise turns encryption on, all that is encrypted, right? If an application is installed on the phone, it will always install on the internal memory. Word documents, etc., from a SharePoint server, all on the internal memory. Only pictures, music, and video can be stored on the SD card. Right? Now, we do understand that there is, for some organizations, an issue with pictures because sometimes users take pictures of whiteboards and locations, etc., and they are could be on an SD card and they could be unencrypted, so they could be unprotected if you want. Because the SD card can be removed and can be inserted in a PC and, read by the PC. It's a standard XFAT format that is being used, right? And by the way, this is a, if you buy a phone in China, never buy a phone via an SD card with a phone, right? Because there's a lot of stuff on the SD card that's probably more valuable than the phone. That's why people, this scenario is really important for China, India, and so forth, where SD cards are a payment, a means of payment and exchange of valuable things like videos, etc., that they and music, etc., that they share with each other. Anything else I can say about encryption? Don't think so. Let's go back to the slides. So the phone also has additional protection for those who use rights management services, Microsoft rights management services. They are part of Windows Server, and they enable tools like Exchange Server and SharePoint Server and the Office environment in general to protect documents that documents and email information that is shared within your organization as such. Rights management enables a user to start an email conversation and say you cannot forward this to other people that are than the ones that we send it to. You cannot print the document that I attach to this email or that you download from the SharePoint server, etc. That is what rights management services does. Right? It does require authentication of the user as such. So if you go in this phone. This is my Microsoft inbox. Let's do a search for Talon, who's my colleague. I know he has sent me an email for your eyes only. So if only this message could self-destruct within 30 seconds, obviously it can, but it is protected, right? I cannot forward, copy, paste, those kind of things, this specific email. And there is a Word document here that opens because I am using Exchange Server. It knows my domain credentials that I use with Microsoft. It checks these domain credentials over the web with Microsoft.com to make sure I'm really the person I am, and it opens this document. So if I would be in a plane flying back to Redmond, I wouldn't be able to do that unless I connected to a Wi-Fi network in the plane or something like that. If I don't have internet access, I wouldn't be able to read this document because the Word, in this case, cannot verify that I'm actually who I say I am as such. Anybody using IRM? Nobody. One person. Yesterday there were two. You were not in the room? That's three people in this event already. I'll ask tomorrow too. Maybe I'll find more. We use it a lot in Microsoft. Maybe too many times, but we do. And then, obviously, in Internet Explorer, malware comes from the internet, right? Internet Explorer has malware protection built in. It has, first of all, it is sandboxed, least privileged Internet Explorer that is locked down. There is no plug-in architecture. You cannot develop ActiveX controls for it. You cannot develop flash-based applications for it to run within the browser. They are not supported with IE10 on Windows Phone as such, right? And it supports smart screen technology that we do. We scan the world of the internet for malware and malware sites and create hashes of all those sites, little signatures that we put on every device, on every Windows device or any Internet Explorer device, so to speak, so that Internet Explorer can check this off against this database of known malware sites as such. And the result is that if you go to one of these sites, right? And why do people go? Because they want to make a lot of money, right? Or they want to find the woman of their life. Or they want to exchange money with somebody in Nigeria, right? It's social engineering. People want to do things, and money and love are the things they want to do. So I want to make a lot of money right now. And I have this website. And if we go to there, this is a test site we have. But Internet Explorer knows this is a known malware site and will block access to this website, right, on the desktop. And the same on a Windows phone. If I go to, where did I go to? Internet Explorer here, I have a tab right here that does exactly that, right? It's exactly the same site. It warns the user, big red, there's something wrong here, don't do this, right? The user can turn this off, though. If he goes to settings, advanced settings, you can turn smart screen off as such. And other things you can turn off if you're concerned about some of the privacy issues, like don't send history to Microsoft to make Bing better, or if you want certain websites not to know about you and try to track you, you can block tracking cookies here, as well as set a selection of what cookies you want to have. The standard version is block some as such. So it protects the user from going to malware sites and doing the wrong thing, right? Users do the wrong thing, don't they? You're not convinced? No? You are all users, right. But you're the smart users. All right. Now, the next step, obviously, is you have this great security architecture and you protect the users from all kinds of things. You need to protect the device from unauthorized access, right? So you need to set policies on the device so that the device is locked, passwords are properly managed, history of passwords is set, etc. Complexity of the password is set. You can do it with Exchange Server from 2007 to 2003, SP2, and later. The more recent your Exchange Server is, the more policies you have. You can also do it with a mobile device management system like Windows Intune / System Center or Mobile Iron or AirWatch or Afaria or, and I'm missing obviously a number of them, Xen Mobile and Symantec and Capricorn, I think, and I'm going to remember, by the end of the session, I'll remember them all. And there are new ones every day. For a not native mobile device management system like the ones I just was summing up, you can unroll a device in the native mobile device management system. The management client is built in, and these mobile device management systems talk to this built-in client to set policies and also to install what usually is called a company portal that points into your private app catalog so you can install, or the user can install, applications from your private app catalog as such. It's a non-intrusive, very simple interface for the user. They go there, they enter usually an identity and a password, which could be their corporate identity and password, but could be different. Their device is enrolled, a certificate is put on the device to make sure it is a known device. That is also used to set up a custom SSL connection with the MDM server so that all the traffic is protected between the device and the mobile device management server. You have, here they are, some of them, and others, I'm going to remember all the and others too, right? Available today, some of them have an app in the Windows Phone Store that is used as their portal. Some of them, like Windows Intune, for example, you can download the app from the App Store and then privately sign it to have the portal as such for software distribution in the app. You can set policies, more policies with an MDM server. And again, that depends a little bit on what brand of MDM server you're using. Some have implemented more policies than others. But critical things are in terms of update and remote and local or enrollment and those kind of things are kind of standard. The other ones are a little diverse by MDM vendor. In future, we'll move to more standardizing that and work with the MDM vendors to have more of a standard offering across MDM. But they all want to differentiate, of course, because they want to add value to you, to it from their perspective to you. And then, obviously, MDM versions can report on the device, what is on the device, what line of business apps are on there, who is using it, those kind of things that are important for you from an asset management and a device management perspective. And then finally, when something goes wrong, you need to be able to fix the problem, right? And remote and local wipe are obviously available on the phone. You can set local wipe in terms of the passwords that have been entered multiple times, wrong passwords that have been entered multiple times, those kind of things. And we protect the user by interrupting him when multiple times the same password or the wrong password is entered. And then you can remotely wipe it using an MDM or an Exchange server as such. The user can do it too, using Exchange server, or they can do it using a registration as an individual onto windowsphone.com, where they can also map their device or have it make a very loud noise so they can find it somewhere in the car, those kind of things, and track it when it's stolen and drive after the guy or girl or whatever, if they want to take that type of risk, right? When there are known bugs on Windows Phone, we will do over-the-air updates. We have done a number of them over the past how many months since we released Windows Phone 8 to update the operating system itself in terms of bugs, also in functionality. And if there is a high security risk bug or we work with Microsoft Security Alert Center that distributes bugs for Windows 8 in general or Microsoft products in general, highly critical bug fixes, and we'll work with them and we'll be able to push bug or updates, bug fix updates out within 24 or 48 hours for all phones globally through the Microsoft update mechanism. Feature updates are usually delivered at a slower pace and also go through a collaboration process with mobile operators and OEMs to make them, to certify them for their networks, et cetera, before they are pushed out to all the devices as such. We'll continue to support existing Windows Phone 8 devices for a long time. We haven't fully officially announced it yet. But we will extend our support lifecycle policy for enterprise customers to 36 months so that you have support on the existing phones today for another until 2017 approximately, right? And continue to update them with bug fixes and new enhancements, etc. And then obviously from a, if an application goes wrong, we can revoke it. We talked about that earlier, so we can make sure we disable it on existing phones. So we have secure hardware. We have a sandbox least privileged model on the phone that protects applications and their data and the user against malware. We sign all the binaries. We have device encryption. And with MDM, et cetera, you can set policies on the phone as such. Delivering you, we believe, a phone that is ready for your enterprise, and that's a great phone to use from a productivity perspective too. Questions? Yes. Okay, so we support Exchange 2003 Service Pack 2 and higher, right? We are on EAS protocol version 14.1, which is the latest, I believe. And obviously the policy said, I don't know if I have a slide on this in my deck that I did yesterday on deployment of Windows Phone in an Exchange environment. I have a slide on this. If you look for my name in the slide deck, you can download it. You have a full list of policies by version of Exchange, as well as functionality, Outlook functionality, if I can call it that way, by version of Exchange Server, right? So does that answer your question? You have the richest environment on Exchange 2010 or higher, 2010 Service Pack 1 or higher. That's the richest functionality. Another question? Why is there no VPN? It's a difficult question to answer. I can say there is no VPN. We have not implemented VPN at this point in time. We have heard a lot of enterprise customers asking for VPN, especially for from a line of business application perspective, and sometimes also SharePoint integration. They want to be able to have the SharePoint behind the firewall, et cetera. We take this feedback very seriously, but at this moment we have nothing specifically to announce. Is it possible to use MDM to lock users out for certain applications? I would say yes. An MDM, when it does the enrollment of the device in the MDM system, it usually collects the identity of the device as well as the identity of the user. Obviously, you can use that information to say, I'm going to classify this user as in a certain role. Let's call him the sales guy. And as a result, I'm going to partition my catalog that I show to this device as the sales guy catalog, and then he gets access to those applications if you want. Or you can say, I want the engineering role having other applications. So you need to associate within the MDM system, and they're all a little different. I know with Windows Intune, you can associate Active Directory object, user object with a device, and then define which applications are available for that user object with System Center, for example, right? So you could do that kind of thing. It requires you more integration work on the back end on the MDM side. Can you repeat your question? Yes, with an MDM system today, you cannot disable. So what applications can you see, right, if you're a managed device? All the built-in applications are available to the user, and then the line of business applications that you have made available are available to the user. The user can also go and install applications from the Windows Phone Store. At this point in time, there's no way you can limit the user from installing publicly applications in the Windows Phone Store. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
All right. So you won't be able to blacklist certain applications or whitelist certain applications? That's what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We have heard that feedback, and we take it very seriously. Yes.
Is it possible to apply those policies only to the company data? So maybe the user brings his own device, and so he hands it over to his daughter.
Yeah. So there are two elements to your question, and I'll try to repeat the question, right? So can you make sure that your policies do not apply to the user's private stuff? Because the scenario you say is the daughter or the son or whatever, the child, right, gets her hands on the Windows Phone of their dad and enters the password three times wrong, obviously, and wipes the phone, right? And then the dad is yelling at somebody, probably not at his daughter, probably at you, correct? So from a user's perspective, let's first look at that, right? As a user, and I don't know if I have it enabled on this phone, but if I not, I'll do it. I have not. I can install Kids Corner on the phone. It's turned off right now, but I'll turn it on, right? I can say, well, I don't know if I have no games, but let's see if I have music. Yeah, let's add meditation music for the small daughter, right? So she can use that. I can add an app. Maybe she could go to Facebook. Right, but obviously if I have games or I have video files or whatever, I can enable that. I'll say next. I can go back here and add more later on if I want, and then I'm finished, right? And now Kids Corner is here. And I can open Kids Corner, and those are the two things that are available, Facebook and meditation music, right? The playlist. I can customize this a little bit and make sure it's Sarah's corner or something, right? And I'm done. Can change the picture, maybe her picture, or change the colors and those kind of things. And then she has this environment. So as a dad, I can lock my phone and let's do that, right? My phone is locked and I can swipe left here and open Kids Corner for her. Give the phone to her. She cannot go back, right? She can only turn it on or turn it back off and turn it back on, and then she will be on the lock screen, right? So if I'm using Windows Phone, I'm going to set this if I have small kids, because I can give them my phone. They can play with this phone dad has because they want to, but they can play games or look a video, watch a video or anything or something like that, and limit the functionality as such. And then when it comes to the lock screen, and you require, for example, a 6-digit PIN, right, that the user needs to get in, we allow we do build in grace into the unlock of a phone. So a user enters his lock number or digital PIN wrong, we give him another chance to do it, and then we bring a screen up to say, type in A1, B2, C3, right? Because they may be drunk or something. If they cannot type in A1, B2, C3 because they are too drunk, the phone will just be there and they cannot do anything with it. If it's somebody who really wants to try to unlock the phone, they will be smart enough to do that, and they will retry until they hit your policy that says, wipe this phone, it's in the wrong hands, right? So even if the daughter gets it, she may be smart enough to do that, but we built this grace period in a few times before we actually wipe the phone because the PIN is entered in the wrong way, or the wrong PIN is entered by the right user, so to speak. Does it answer your question?
Yeah,
partly.
It's not possible to say wiping affects only company data.
Yes, so you want a full separation of company data and private data, and when there is a PIN on the phone put by you, you only want to wipe the company data, right? So we do isolate this information. You can unenroll a device from an MDM system, and then it will wipe the company data only from the phone. But the PIN lock is a full wipe by definition. So if there's a PIN on the phone, if it's coming from you, or a user can put their own PIN on their phone too, right? Then there is only one PIN to log into the phone. There are not two separate PINs as such. We do not do this schizophrenic two worlds thing. Most people are not schizophrenic. They are one person, and they want to do their phone across their personal life and their business life, even if they get their phone from their company. Otherwise, they will start using two phones, right? Who has users with two phones? A lot of you, right? Because there are a lot of users with two phones. Because of that, because they need to have a business phone and a personal phone, and they are not allowed to mix the situation. There was another question over there. I don't know who was it. Over there. More questions? Yes. Say again. No, we do not have VPN on Windows Phone. Yes. I classify direct access as VPN. Is that okay? I have no idea how we are doing on time. We're going to have to give away a phone. Everybody has gotten a card and filled it out. Nobody has kept this card. There is another card there. Obviously, we have more while he's doing that, more sessions. I forgot what day. We are Wednesday today. Yeah, we have another session at 5 using C and C++ for app development. And then we have tomorrow a number of sessions. Stay here, stay. All right, you have another card. And on Friday, and obviously, we have labs, and we have a booth where you can go to and ask all kinds of questions and play with existing Windows phones and ask questions. And what's this about? Promotions we are doing at the booth, and then the website that I showed you. And don't forget to do evals. I love evals. And I'm the innocent hand that needs to... I'm trying to be more innocent than yesterday. Oh, let's go here. This is an innocent person. Joachim Gross, I think. All right. Are you a Windows Phone user?
Yeah.
You are?
No.
He's now? What did you use? What are you using now? An iPhone? All right. And a BlackBerry. All right. Now you're going to have 3 phones. All right. So this phone is for you. It's unlocked. You can use it on any GSM. All right, welcome. Thank you very much for your time. And I'm still here if you have questions or in the booth, or I'll be back tomorrow for app management and device management in depth. Thank you.